As I say, I'm very happy to be back in Corning on this annual visit. A few months ago, someone told me that the church was being renovated. And I love the old St. Mary's Church. And I said, that's great. It will be finished by the time I get here. I guess I was too optimistic. So I have to wait till next year before I see the beauty of the church, although it's a beautiful church even on the outside. So. Well, this morning, guests gathered here in this gym, which is now actually a pretty beautiful place for worship, considering the circumstances. I didn't realize how well it would be set up for a mass. Anyway, this morning we jump into the middle of a conversation between Jesus and Peter. Jesus makes a prediction of his passion and resurrection. Peter immediately objects to this idea, and then Jesus very strongly corrects Peter. There's more in the gospel, but I'm just going to focus on these three steps, this idea of prediction of suffering or declaration about suffering, then objection to suffering, and then the correction that comes with it. But before we reflect on these three steps, I want to recall that we're jumping into the middle of the conversation here. We're actually continuing what we started last Sunday. We don't normally start a conversation by introducing the idea of the harshness of suffering, because if we do that, it would just turn people off. So it's important to realize Jesus didn't just launch into talking about the cross all of a sudden. It fit into the context of the conversation that was going on. So this idea that you don't start with the bad news first reminds me of an experience I had when I was in high school a little while ago. And when I was in high school, a recruiter came from the Army to recruit us. We were seniors, and to invite us to consider joining the Army. Well, I wasn't at the time interested in the military at all, but I had to admire this guy's presentation. Because he didn't stand up and say, you're going to have to go off to some foreign country and risk your life. He said, first of all, there's a signing bonus. I think it was $10,000. I mean, when you're 17 years old and someone says, we'll give you $10,000 to sign this contract, it's pretty appealing. And then all about the training, about the education, about the opportunities, see the world, serve your country. And it, as I say, it was a pretty appealing presentation, invitation, advertising, really. And now one of my classmates, of course, raised his hand and said, well, what if there's a war? And then, well, of course, that's what the Army's for, to defend the country and support the causes of the nation. That's also good. But you don't start by saying, we're sending you to war. You start by saying, it's good to join the Army. So anyway, that just came back to my mind. Jesus didn't start with this prediction of his passion. Even though this is the first time he brought it up so explicitly, and he brings it up several times in the gospel, but he didn't do it this way. Even though the cross is—it's true and it's essential—that's not where he started. He started with what we heard last week. Remember? Maybe you don't remember. Jesus said, "Who do people say that I am?" And the apostles gave some answers. And then Jesus said, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter's the one who came up with the right answer. You are the Messiah. You are the Christ. You are the Son of the living God. Exactly. And then Jesus said to Peter, and you're the rock. You're the rock on whom I will build my church. So that's all great stuff. That gospel last Sunday was essential for understanding Jesus' identity and Peter's identity and the nature of the church. So that was a lot. But then it's time to take the next step. And that's where we start with today's gospel. The next step is, okay, you've identified me as the Messiah, and that's right. But now let me tell you what this Messiah's mission is. The Messiah has a sacrificial and triumphant mission. It includes suffering and death and resurrection. In fact, the Messiah's mission here, more than you could possibly have imagined, Peter, is a complete revolution. It's an overthrow of the kingdom of Satan. It's the defeat of all suffering, of all sin, of all death, and a promise of eternal life. So that's what this is all about. That's the first step. Jesus in this gospel, Jesus' declaration of his passion, death, and resurrection. Second step, Peter's reaction. You know, Peter's kind of an impulsive fellow, and his reactions are just what comes to him off the top of his head. He hears about the suffering and death part. Apparently, he didn't notice about the rising on the third day part. But when he hears about suffering and death, he says, "No way. No way." I should actually read it from the gospel. "God forbid, Lord, no such thing shall ever happen to you." God forbid. Now, when we hear Peter say this, we should see ourselves. We should see that this is exactly how we react when we hear about suffering. We might not say it exactly that way, but our inner reaction is, "No way. It shouldn't be like that. That should not happen. It shouldn't happen to you. It shouldn't happen to me or anybody." We have this kind of automatic rejection of the idea of suffering. And when we hear about it, we react like that. Senseless violence, loss, pain, death. I'm sure you heard about that terrible avalanche in Nepal a couple of days ago. I heard about it because it was in the headlines, but a day or two later, they started showing the video footage of it. It was horrible. It was horrible. Unbelievably bad. Innocent people just going about their life. It wasn't even raining, and all of a sudden, just a wall of water and debris just wipes out the whole village. And the reaction is, "Oh, that's just horrible. Just terrible." It should be the reaction. That's the natural reaction, and it should be that. We should have a natural instinct against suffering. The only problem is that natural instinct, if we keep letting it go that way, then we have a judgment against God for letting things like that happen. And that's where we're in trouble. And that's where Peter gets into trouble, because it's Jesus himself who says this is how it's going to happen. Who are you, Peter, to object to the Lord? But this is, I want to pause with this, because it's important that we acknowledge this is how we react. Even when we know that something bad is going to happen, we still reject it. Maybe the easiest example is we know that our loved ones are going to die. And when it happens, we're still shocked and saddened, and we grieve. And we should. But it shows that natural reaction. I have to alert or make mention of the other big news this week was the death of Dolly Parton. May she rest in peace. By the way, just throw this in as a side. You know, when you hear about somebody's death, if you're a person of faith, man or woman of faith, the right response is to pray for that person. May she rest in peace. Grant her eternal life, O Lord. Now, it's fine to honor her. Everyone loves Dolly Parton, but it's not enough simply to remember all the things you like about her. It's take the next step and say, "Lord, have mercy. Lord, grant her eternal life." That's the right Christian response to when you hear about somebody's death. Anyway, so when Dolly Parton died, I mean, she was 80 years old. An 80-year-old is obviously near the end of life. The scriptures say that we have 70 years or 80 if we're strong. But when the news of her death hit the country, people were really shocked. Maybe you yourselves, shocked, moved to tears, grief, as if, and I heard somebody say this, as if we hoped that she would live forever. Because we don't like death, and we don't like hearing about people's death. Now, there's something to this. We do long for life. We long for life without suffering. We long for life without death, life without sadness, without sadness or mourning or tears. That is what we long for, meaning we long for heaven. We long for heaven. We're made for heaven. Did you notice in the psalm this longing? "My soul is thirsting for you, Lord. My flesh pines and my soul thirsts like the earth parched, lifeless, and without water." We're not in a condition yet that we're satisfied with. We're longing for something better. That's heaven. And we're not there yet. That's where the mission of Jesus comes in. He comes into this world of suffering and takes it on, unites himself with us, with our suffering, so that he can open the way from here to there, from death and suffering to glory, life forever. Okay, so that's Jesus' mission. He's taking care of this very thing that we don't like by taking it on. So that's the second step, to recognize this reaction. Third step, Jesus' response to Peter. So Peter, you say this shouldn't happen? You think this shouldn't happen? Jesus does not agree with Peter here. He doesn't say, oh, you're right, Peter. I should never have said that. I should never have said that I'm going to suffer. Oh, yeah, you're right. I take it back. He doesn't say that. No, what he does instead is he unleashes one of the most shocking rebukes in the whole New Testament. Get behind me, Satan. Get behind me, Satan. What? Satan? How did he get in here? It's a shock. And certainly Peter was shocked by it. We should all be shocked by it. Get behind me, Satan. What? Just a few minutes ago, he said to Peter, you are rock, and on this rock I will build my church. Now, just 1 or 2 minutes later, he's saying, get behind me, Satan. And it's meant to be shocking. Now, Peter's not Satan, okay? Don't take that leap. Some strange sects will say that Peter was Satan. No. But Jesus recognizes in Peter's resistance to suffering, he recognizes the familiar tactics, the familiar influence of Satan. Satan always opposes the cross, meaning he always opposes the means to our salvation. He doesn't want us to be saved. So we have a natural resistance to suffering. Satan doesn't care about suffering. He doesn't want us to be saved. And that's the real danger. Okay, but this is why Jesus rebukes Peter. He says, you are an obstacle to me. You're an obstacle to me. You're getting in the way, meaning you're getting in the way of the very means by which I have come to save you. So don't do that. Don't get in the way of the cross. Don't reject the cross, Peter. And then he gives this key line. This is the last thing I'm going to dwell on. This key line, it's a great instruction for us. He says, you are thinking not as God does, but as human beings do. You're thinking not as God does, but as human beings do. As if to say, don't settle for mere human thinking. Accept God's way of thinking, which is higher. Yes, we have human reason and we should use it, but God's reason, if you could call it that, God's way, transcends what we know by reason. He's inviting us to faith. Faith. Faith makes it possible to see beyond suffering and death. It makes it possible to defeat the temptations of Satan. Faith makes it possible for us to think the way God thinks, which is a great gift. So that's why he says, you're thinking not as God does, but as human beings do. It's a way of saying, change your way of thinking and accept my way of thinking. Okay, so that's the three points I wanted to emphasize. First of all, this business of suffering, it's a real part of this world, and it's the part that Jesus takes on himself. Secondly, we have to acknowledge we have a reaction to suffering, which comes naturally to us. We don't like it, and we resist it, but because Jesus takes on this suffering, we have to get past that natural reaction. Don't give in to that temptation. Don't give in to the influence of Satan. Rather, think the way God thinks. And God thinks, I want to save my people, and this is how I'm going to do it. Come follow me.